You are tuned in to the Mark Order Podcast. Join the Mark Order.
That means it is a hard cut by Ryan. And if Ryan's seen the introduction, you know that already means Kate's not here. She is apparently, I don't know, she's got one of her ailments. I think she's faking it. I think she's out spending money in casinos or doing something like that. But I am joined by champion of basketball fan, Joe. How you doing, Joe?
Oh, I'm doing very well, Ryan. I'm still riding the high of the next winning championship, so, you know, I can miss more than the next 53 years of my life.
That high is going to last until next playoffs.
Yeah, well, you know, they'll still be better off than the 76ers, so.
I no doubt, but that high lasts the next playoff. It's having, you know, experience it with like the Eagles, the high lasts until your team is no longer able to defend the championship. Like, so whenever they get eliminated next, that is when, so if they make it to the finals again, your high is going to last finals to finals. If they, you know, they make it out of the first round, it's whatever. Scott saying 2 weeks in a row, break up the band. You know, Kate just likes to run from the grind from time to time, but I'm still here saying hi to Taylor Cannon, Tim McFall, Big G, Pieces, Scott, thanks for hanging out. And hearing, you know, Joe brag about his Knicks. Listen, the sad part is, if it was any other team in the Knicks, if you took all the players plus an assistant coach, because Mo Cheeks, and you put them on any other team, I love the team. They're all very likable. They're all Villanova guys. You got Mo Cheeks. Like, I'm all in it. I love, but they play for the wrong team. And again, we were talking before we went on air, the Spurs playing the dumbest brand of basketball that's ever been played. I just don't know how you lead in almost every game and you lose almost every game. You know, it just, I often wonder though, if they don't blow the lead in game two, I'll surrender game one. But if they don't blow that lead in game, not that that wasn't the big lead, but it was a lead in game two. If they don't blow that lead, does the series go differently? Like, do they have the confidence needed to, like, because I know they did win game three, but you're still down 2-1. Like, is there, if you're ever tying the series up deep, I don't know. They still played so dumb. It's hard to say. Cause, and the Knicks didn't. The Knicks were smart. They realized that at any point they could come back. And that's, you know. That's basketball, but we're on to wrestling. Was there any news this week for wrestling? AEW, I should say.
Other than talking, what, Jack Perry's contract supposedly coming up soon?
Yeah, his contract is about to come up, though. He is still featured regularly on TV, which usually if your contract's up, they don't do that. And I'm not saying that the news is wrong. It makes me just believe that they have faith that they're bringing him back. Yeah, like I think they have considerable faith that he's coming back. All right, so that's it. Then we'll move right into the show. Unless someone in the chat ever brings something up, we'll come back. Probably be a quick one tonight with no Kate, and a good show, but just I think one that we'll move quickly through. The show starts out with all 500 members of the Don Callis family standing in a stairwell, talking to the camera. When MJF joins them about who's going to be on his team tonight for the 12-man tag, which for apparently we were going to have a 12-man tag tonight, even though we're going to have it at Forbidden Door. The chat was pointing out how stupid that is. And I agree. As fun as the match was, why? The segment was fine. I liked the way MJF hyped up Kevin Knight. I liked, you know, Andrade's interaction with MJF, but to me, this shows the flaws of the Don Callis family. Like, you have someone like Okada, it just feels like a nothing in the family. Like, what are we doing here? It just, it didn't feel right. there was nothing wrong with the segment, but it shows me what I think has finally happened to the Don Callis family, why they're not working for me anymore is because they've gone too big. What are any thoughts that you have on the opening?
No, I agree. I think, you know, when they talk about football teams and they say, you know, if you have quarterbacks, you don't have any.
Yeah.
The Don Callis family has too many, you know, too many 1A guys. So they don't really have one. Because, like I said, they can't, people get lost in the shuffle. I don't know. Maybe you want to go straight into the main after this segment, but
yeah, we can start with the main. Why not? Because it all flows together. In the middle of the show, the Don Callis family does attack. What's his name? Ishii. Big Tom. Big Tom attacks Big Tom, so he can't be part of the team. So the conglomeration: Mark Briscoe, Orange Cassidy, Roger Strong, and Kyle. Decide that they're going to, and I'm stopping at Kyle because we get a dueling Kyle's chant tonight, which I quite thoroughly enjoyed the Kyle. They brought in two extra members. It so happened to be Darby and Dikeshta. Pretty obvious, I think, that they were going to be the two because the five that they were, the six they were facing were MJF, Andrade, Jake Doyle, Okada, Kevin Knight, and Kyle Fletcher. So it makes sense that Dikeshta and, Darby Allin are there since they're feuding with Kevin Knight and Kyle Fletcher. I should mention it had the stipulation if either team gets disqualified in this match, the man that gets disqualified will be out of the forbidden door. I get it. That's actually a nice little stipulation, one that should matter. The match was fun. The highlight of the whole match to me was when MJF's arm, Doyle was facing away and MJF was supposed to be bringing, I think it was Orange Cassidy's arm to him, one of their guys' arm to get hit. And it ends up being MJF's, but Andrade keeps encouraging Doyle to keep slamming the arm against the rope because he hates MJF. I appreciate it. They're not going to work well together, but it's a creative way of them not working well together. This had its typical moments of individuals and then they would have a big group brawl and then it'd be like one individual hitting another individual's hitting their move, like one to the one to the one to the one. It's typical of a 12-man match. Though the Don Callis family won with the salt of the earth from MJF on Roger Strong. And then afterwards, Don Callis family clears the ring and they beat up Briscoe some more and MJF hits him with a diamond ring. I don't love that ending because I know that the Callis family just won, so they were in better condition. But I don't understand how the conglomeration went from just having this match to totally unable to get back up after the match. It didn't make sense to me. What'd you think on all of it?
Yeah, so the ending was kind of abrupt after everything went on in the match. I'm with you and everyone in the chat about why. Why did we have this match? Why did we have elements of the match? Like, you know, even if they would have put Mark Briscoe's team versus, you know, six of the Don Callis family not in MJF, I think that would have been interesting, at least from an MJF, you know, Weasley type of way. And also with the situation of if you get DQ'd, you're a man down. I really thought that was going to be the undriving something to get disqualified and leave MJF and them a man down. But they didn't really play into that stipulation, even though they made it. So I didn't understand that booking decision. Otherwise, it was a 12-man tag match. I mean, it was, like you said, it had a lot of fun spots, but I don't know if we need it to get to where we're going on a week from Sunday.
Yeah, I'm with you. I really thought they were going to play into the disqualification thing more. Like that was going to be the I thought the Andrade. I'm 100% with you, and that's where I saw it going was the Andrade. That's how he got out of the match, which would have been further issues between him and Don Callis, and further issues between him and MJF. War Hero thinks that the Mark's team is a final because the Pitbull will be in the match. I don't think that that I think they set up Darby and DeKestra for the reason. I think they want them because of Kevin Knight and Kyle Fletcher. I think it's like, hey, look, we can include every feud. Would it be cool to have the Pitbull in the match? Absolutely. I think he'd be perfect for this type of match. But I just think like they clearly are. It's a very wrestling tropey thing, so I can't. Oh, hey, these two guys are feuding, so now they're part of this. I don't get the 12-man tonight at all. I mean, it was a fun match, but just like, so the only difference now is that there's going to be a cage around this.
Yeah. And so I think they've shrunk it down to like a 6-man tag or something else other than putting all the same guys in the match.
Yeah, you take 3 of yours versus 3 of ours, and we'll see how this lives. And it could have been for, I don't know what the reason could have been, because this isn't a blood and guts match, so there's no like, timed entrances, because that would have been what it is. Hey, you take your 3 versus our 3, and the winner gets first entry. You know, War Hero thinks one of the trios champs out, and Don can still change people whenever he wants. I get what you're saying. I still don't see it though. Scott doesn't think Ishii's even cleared to wrestle, so that might come into effect. I would be shocked. I wouldn't be upset, but I would be shocked if the exact lineups weren't what we see in a week and a half. I would actually would rather some changes just to give it a different feel of the match, you know. But the only thing I could see is Andrade dropping out somehow. But I don't. But you know, I just don't think there's any replacement in the Callis family for Andrade. They don't have enough guys.
Don't have enough guys.
Yeah, there's just no one to replace him. Real quick, I forgot to bring this up, and I don't know how I almost forgot it. When the opening promo with when everyone walked away, and it was just who was the last one standing there? Was it Andrade? Was the last one there? Did you see Trent in the background?
Yeah.
I don't know if he got trapped or. Yeah, but so Scott's saying Trent got caught in the background, and I don't know if he got trapped there or if it was on purpose or what, but he's just kind of like pacing like back and forth, back and forth, like he doesn't know what to do. It was very funny. I'm like, I hope this is on purpose, because it's just very subtle, but just so funny. He's like, everyone else left, Andrade's talking, and Trent is just on top of the stairs pacing.
Or maybe it's further fantasies, you know, dissension among the group with him not feeling like he's reaping the benefits of being a part of the family.
That's a good point. I mean, I don't know what the family's done for him, to be quite honest. He's been fun when they've given him times to talk and stuff, but like, I feel like he's been, Scott's saying he thinks, he looked upset not to get picked. That's not a bad idea, Scott, kind of agreeing with what Joe said. And then Peace is saying, unless injury-wise, he thinks this will be the lineups. I agree. But I think Trent would do well in the conglomeration, but, you know, back with his buddies. But he's just, again, we've been over this. There's just too many guys in the Callis family. When the Callis family was, like, half the size, Trent being there mattered because there was only so many slots to fill. But now, it's just, again, there's 50 of them. I don't understand. It's just too many. I mean, at the end of the day, that's the problem. I wish they could cut the debt. They need to, obviously Andrade's leaving the group. I think we could feel that. We know that's coming. I think they got to figure out a way to get a couple extra guys out of there.
Well,
I'd like to see, like,
you figure Kevin Knight will fight.
Yes. I'd like Andrade gone, I'd Kevin Knight out of there, and one other person. I don't know who. I mean, Trent might be one, but just one other guy at least to get out and free up some.
Trent goes, yeah, Rocky will probably go, so Punky Vice will be gone.
Yeah, which would be a fine thing for them to be out. Like, again, it just feels like even if they don't go conglomeration, they just go on their own, I'd be okay with that because, like, there's just too many of them. All right. So then that was not the opener. That was the main event, but it was still a very good main event. I liked it. Like, I mean, I don't want to trash it. I think it was fun. It just wasn't my, I think if it wasn't for the fact that we had this exact match in a cage happening in a week and a half, I would feel completely different about it.
Yeah. It almost felt like a go home episode of Dynamite. But
yes.
Was it?
Yeah. That honestly, that is a good, comparison. Actually, I'm going to switch around to another thing, and it's because I think it relates to the Kevin Knight story. Maybe it doesn't. Actually, I don't know if it does, but it'd be nice. Which is, we had the showdown between Will Ospreay and Swerve, and it was basically a promo battle. One, you know, Ospreay talked, and then Swerve, Ospreay saying, like, where were you when they broke my neck? You know, where were you when I went to help Hangman out and I got beat up then? He made a joke about Darby climbing Mount Everest but unable to climb a cage, which he really want. Like, that was Jeremy Lambert pointed out on Twitter. Like, that was his joke. He wanted that to land. I don't think the crowd was great tonight, so I don't think I think he would have reacted better in certain other crowds. He then said, like, treats winning the Owen is not his World Cup. It's his World Cup is then winning the World Championship in Wembley. And he says it obviously a much better way than I'm just saying it. But then you have Swerve, and Swerve goes through his whole thing, and Swerve has a really good time basically being like, everything you said we were fighting for fell apart. Like, Hangman lost, this is where we are. Also, those guys broke your neck, but you're still friends with them. What are you doing? Like, very good points. Where I get caught up in this is that Ospreay hits Swerve. Swerve lands on his butt in the corner. Nana hands him the chain. Now, part of me is like, that's a very, he's on the ground and that's a very slow handoff. Ospreay, if you attack now, Swerve can never use that chain. But no, Ospreay lets him get up and have the chain, and it looks like he's in trouble when the Death Riders come out, and suddenly Swerve doesn't have the numbers to do any damage. So this is where the Kevin Knight thing comes in. I think Swerve is going to realize he needs a group, because everyone in AEW, including Ospreay, who is like supposed to be on his own, everyone has a group. And so if Swerve doesn't have any friends, he can't get past people like because I think he's going to lose to Ospreay. I think it's going to be like, if he doesn't have any friends, he can't get people past people like Ospreay, because they do. And I think that's where someone like Kevin Knight, and I think there's probably some other people out there that they can throw to the Swerve's team and be like, him come back and be like, I knew I needed help, so I went out and got it. So what do you think of the dueling promo battles? What do you think of my theory?
Dueling promos. I found myself liking Swerve's promo better, because to your point, what he was saying was all factual and all things that I wondered and wanted answers as far as why Will was doing what he was doing. Will's promo just didn't land for me. I didn't find myself wanting to root for him. From his tone of, you know, he got married here, and then he was talking about smashing his wife and leaving her to clean up when he went to Houston. And then he, you know, he had the Death Rider come back him up. I just felt, and then he got to pushing Swerve. He just felt very, you know, not babyface Will Ospreay. And I found myself not liking him as much as what I liked from Swerve, or felt more sympathetic for Swerve. To your point about Swerve getting his own group, I don't know. Like, I feel like we've seen that enough with him, you know, with the Mobile Embassy and everything else. I don't know if he wants to go down that road again. And if he does, I don't know if... I don't know if Kevin Knight wants to do that right now, especially seeing how being in a group is working for him now. So I'm torn between that theory.
Yeah, I mean, apparently I guess I missed Swerve dropping an F-bomb. I don't know how I missed Swerve dropping an F-bomb. Apparently Pista says that he did. But I get what you're saying. Like, he had a group and we, but I, what I like is he, it's not his first go-to right now, which to me though makes the storytelling of him being like, I tried not to, but everyone has one here. And Will Ospreay of all people is with the Death Riders. Like in the weirdest way, it's kind of, he ends up with a group. It's a baby face move in some weird way, which is like, I tried to do it on my own, but they're not letting me. Like everybody's got someone. But we'll see. I mean, and Big G asking where's Hangman. Hangman had a lot of scheduled time off coming, so I think he's just enjoying some family time. I wish more wrestlers did. So now Scott's pointing out they censored him for 30 seconds. I thought it was my cable. I'll be honest with you. I thought there was just, my cable was a little wonky. I thought it was that. So that, there you go. I wish more wrestlers would take extended times off. I think one, it's better for their bodies. And I think it's better for stories. They go away, they come back, they go away, they come back. And then, yeah, it's always refreshing. That's just, you know, everyone talks. I've heard rumors, oh, wrestling needs an off season. I don't think wrestling needs an off season. I think players do. I think wrestlers do. I think, you know, it doesn't have to be 6 months or 3 months or whatever. It's just, but like, even if you give them a month.
Load management, right? Like,
yeah. Get that Joel Embiid treatment. Yeah, but that's because I think it just makes wrestlers fresher when they come back, you know, and I think the crowd likes them more. Like even like someone like Jericho, which, okay, we'll talk about Jericho the quick. What the hell is his name? Why am I blanking on a simple name here, guys?
Champa?
Thank you. I always think it's Psycho Killer. But you know, Ciampa has a quick promo on Jericho. My segue into this is Jericho is someone who was not well liked before he went away for a while, comes back, and I people didn't love last week's, but overall has had a decent reception. Last week's was not great, but overall, and I think time away does that. Ciampa pointing out in his promo that like he likes the old Jericho that was, you know, changing the business and breaking walls down and almost like a much more serious guy. And instead of this, you know, hokey, jokey guy who's making trying to get the audience to laugh and all that. It was an interesting approach for Ciampa. I don't know if I mean, Jericho's always kind of been a bit of a comedy character, so I don't know if that plays 100%. But I think it was decent work, and Ciampa was very good on the mic. So I don't know if you have any thoughts on it.
No, I think it's kind of an easy promo to give if you want to kind of create a reason or a reason for why this feud is happening. Especially for a legend like Jericho, it's easy to be like, hey, I miss the guy you were 15 years ago, like the hard-edged guy who, no, did what we could to win. I didn't care about crowd reaction. That's just an easy kind of trope to play into, and I buy it, knowing, you know, Ciampa is a student of the game and appreciates the history of wrestling, so I can see him being insulted. Jericho isn't taking things more seriously.
Yeah, I mean, that was my one comment about, you weren't here, that's right, you were watching your Knicks win. That was my one comment about the thing last week, is that I liked that Jericho was being silly goofy and Ciampa just couldn't handle it because Ciampa is very deadly serious. His whole thing is like, I'm Mr. Serious. I'm not. First of all, well done, Joe. Well done in the chat. Sorry for breaking it down. Big G makes a comment, absence makes the heart grow fonder. And then Joe with a great reply, is that why Kate takes time off the show so much? Well played. Well played. But yeah, I just like that Ciampa is like, I can't be part of your humorous games. Like when he was calling him Tommy, no, my name is Tommaso. Like that is I'm too serious for this thing. And I appreciated it. Oh my God. So Scott George just posted that 4 million people are expected to be in New York tomorrow. Thank God I'm not one of them. And I don't mean that even like, I just, that's a nightmare to me.
Yeah, that's not the usual average for New Year's Eve.
Yeah, like I didn't go to the Phillies parade when they won. I didn't go to either Eagles parades. Like, that's not my jam. What'd you say?
So you, the things I know about Ryan is that you love large crowds of people.
Oh, yeah, it's my favorite thing ever. The only, I don't even know if I'd go to the parade. It used to be, and I don't, do you know where the New Yorks are ending up? Like, are they staying outside the whole time? Or are they ending up at Madison Square Garden or what they're doing?
I can't remember. I saw the route the other day.
Like,
you don't need to go inside for these parades.
No. Well, like when the Phillies did theirs, they ended up at Citizens Bank Park. And if the Flyers ever won and they gave their ticket holders a chance to be at like Citizens Bank while they all did, I would do that. I'd go inside work, but I am not standing on a parade route for whatever, you know. And should you know, and I know this is really weird that we're back to basketball in the middle of this wrestling thing, but I will say, because I doubt you watched last week, I had said, even on here, as the Spurs were up 30, I said, the New York Knicks are known for going on huge runs. Don't count them out. I was saying it. I just had a feeling. You know, this is this.
The parade starts down by Barry Park. It'll travel north along Broadway and end up at City Hall.
Okay, that makes sense. That's. I just don't know how that's even fun after a while. Like, I don't know. Why did the, I'm going to ask, well, you're a Knicks fan, but you're not from New York. I just don't know why the Knicks fans seem so much like angry in their win. So many fights and so, like, don't get me wrong. Philly fans go crazy too, but it's almost like more crazy love. Like, they like lose their minds and trash things. There was, I don't remember seeing that many fights when the Eagles won the Super Bowl. Like, it's just, oh my God.
I was wrap my head on that kind of fandom of fights and, you know, climbing light poles and knocking over cars and lighting things on fire. I can't get my head into that realm. So that's only my thing.
No, I'm much more in, like, I get being excited and you're gonna cheer and have fun, but like, I don't get like trashing things, and I definitely don't get fighting after your team just won. Now, my buddy has a story after the, and then we'll go back to wrestling, after the Eagles won the first time. You know, that was the big moment for the Eagles fans because they had never won and never thought they would. I mean, this is and so my buddy they go out after the win. I wasn't there for the story, and he slaps the back of someone, and he did it happily. It wasn't a fight. And the guy turns around so angry, and my buddy just goes, "Oh yeah." And everyone just, and the guy just hugs him. Like, you couldn't be mad. So I don't understand how a fight happens. Like, yes, Big G, they greased the poles when the Eagles won, but that was because people were climbing them. They weren't like trashing. Like, Eagles fans trash things too out of excitement. It's the fighting I didn't understand. Like, it's not like the, I hate to say it, I expect some property destruction no matter who wins, because your drunk people will grab something, they'll throw something. I just don't understand the fighting. Like, that's, you're supposed to be happy.
Well, you know what kind of fighting do you understand?
No.
I'm gonna try to segue into a match.
I was waiting to see which match you tried to go with. I guess I'll go to Kenny Omega versus Tony Nese. I'm going to be honest with you. It started the show. Well, it didn't start the show, but it was the first match of the show. This was a little bit of a letdown. I was kind of hoping they'd give Tony Nese a little bit more time. Does good things in ROH. He's a very... What?
I forgot on the roster. Like, I don't watch ROH. Well, now he was still there.
He's in ROH and he does a good job in ROH and he's a very good wrestler. I was like, you know what? This is... I'm not expecting him to go out and have like whatever, but I thought this would be a fun... give Kenny Omega a decent match, you know, decent time match, and just have some fun because both guys can go. And nope, it was relatively quick. The big deal here is that after the match, TMDK arrives, which is why I'm shocked, even though she's in pain, that Kate didn't show up because she's such a TMDK nerd. And they show up, and, you know, it's Zack Sabre Jr., Badu Tito, and Mikey Nichols. No Shane Haste, no whoever else is in there. I don't even know all the people that are in it. Robbie, yeah. But they get in the ring and they're kind of staring down Kenny kind of walks out of the ring as they walk into the ring, so he avoids him. But it looks like he's outnumbered, but then all of a sudden, the Young Bucks and Jack Perry come out. And Kenny takes the mic, says, "Hey, thanks, Zach, for coming out. I know it would look great for you if you beat me, but it'd also look good for me if I beat you," type deal. Like, be great for AEW, but it'd also be great for New Japan. But look, hey, they both got their teams. I wish they had let Zack Sabre Jr. talk. I think that would have been more fun. But I do kind of like that they acknowledge both guys have backings at this point. And it's also when we were talking about earlier with Jack Perry's contract, like clearly they still want him around. So I don't think he's going to go anywhere. So what'd you think of the match, and what'd you think of the after?
The match wasn't expecting it to be such a, a drubbing of Tony's. I think you're going to be a squash like that, but it was to the point where I thought, do we need to have the match at all if they're going to be like this? And if they're going to be a promo after, could have just been a Kenny in-ring promo? And also, if you're going to give Kenny a match, I'd rather it against someone who is a techer, someone who has similar style to Zack Sabre Jr. I think that makes more sense to me than a random match against Tony Nese that, just because Kenny Omega wanted to get a ref in, I guess. I don't know where this goes. I guess they'll have their match, and I guess maybe they'll have some kind of, 8-man tag or on the line, and with the Elite versus TMDK maybe next week.
Yeah, that's kind of how I see it. They'll have their, but I just, I liked the match. I don't know. I
Kenny promo
didn't do much. No, yeah. That's what I guess where I was trying to go. Like, I don't think this favored anything. I guess that's what, at the end of the day, I liked the quick 5-second match that it was. It was fine. It's just I wanted more. And I liked the promo for us, but didn't move. Neither of them moved anything.
No.
And then Kate's not here, so I could be nice to Jesse. Jesse had a great pun. It was a nice enough match. Well done. Well played. Well played. There is a funny moment that we should have talked about after the Ospreay swerve thing, where they're in the back and Daniel Garcia says something to Ospreay, so he like pins him up against the wall. It's just the look on Garcia's face as he's getting, choked out by Ospreay. Then Mox talking like they're just words. You can't let words. And then Daniel Garcia being like, yeah, they're just words. And that leads me into our next match, because it was Daniel Garcia and John Moxley versus Bandido and Brody King. And I want to point out that I love Daniel Garcia. I feel like anytime they want to heat him up, they can. He's really reacted well to Death Rider. Like, he has this serious but almost silly energy of like, he can go, but he almost like takes it too seriously when he's trying to be serious. And he does like the swiping of his boots into like his opponent's face and all. He's very good at that, but he's just, I feel like at any moment they can fire him back up. This was a really good match. Brodito was the hit tag team for a while, so it's fun that they still get to tag together. Moxon and Daniel Garcia aren't the typical Death Riders tag, so like that was kind of fun. Brodito did win when Bandido hit a 21-plex on Daniel Garcia, and Brody King dove out of the ring, did a suicide dive out of the ring to Mox to keep him from interfering. But that's okay with me, because I think Brodito is a fun tag. I think they make sense winning. They're the established team, whereas like I said, Garcia and Mox, they may be in the same stable, but they're not the team that usually team tags together. I don't know what this is one of those things. Actually, I don't want to say I don't know what the purpose of this is, because I don't care what the purpose of this is. Sometimes I like that they do this on Dynamite, which is like, this really doesn't have like a lot of story to it, and that's okay. No, the story comes later, but sorry.
No, I just the match was fun. I like Virginia as a tag team. I thought knowing the Virginia versus the Death Riders, I thought there's a lot more like little comedy spots in this than I thought it would be. There was like the dance off, and then we had like the bark off between Marina and Brody. I wasn't expecting as much silliness out of all that. And then I'm conscious of the thing that Virginia won. Like you said, they haven't tagged in a while. And I felt like they were trying to heat up the Death Riders, make them more unstoppable with Will now. So I'm kind of surprised they lost. And I don't know, it probably kind of goes back into the backstage segment. That leads to where this tag team match is going. Bandido wanted to get the Continental Championship from Moxley. All good and well, but it was an odd thing to be like, hey, after our little side quest, we can still come back together and be dominant as a tag team. And all of a sudden, Bandido was like, I want a single title again. It felt very weird to go from, hey, we're back in the tag team for a minute. Now I'm going to leave and go back to focusing on a single title.
Yeah. Scott doesn't like that Bandido is challenging for a title when he already has a title.
Also true.
Scott, it's an ROH title, so they don't count it. Yeah, just got to remember that. Kylie saw the new He-Man movie, said it's amazing. I haven't seen it, and I saw mixed reviews. If that's too amazing, that makes me want to see it now. Pario Magazine also agreeing. Okay. Jamie over there said, like, that's, I'm hearing a lot of like for He-Man. I might have to check He-Man out now. Thank you guys, because I wasn't sure. But yeah, I liked that the match had no reason and they developed something out of it rather than the reverse, which is you had to have a reason for the match. And like, I just think it spices things up to be like, hey, sometimes guys just fight and then things happen. You know, this is wrestling. This isn't, if you want to treat it like a sport, sometimes things just need to start that way. So apparently He-Man embodies the 80s cartoon and is the movie we should have gotten in 86. Never trashed the 86 movies. Dolph Lundgren is the greatest He-Man of all time.
Can I tell you something really quick? We're talking about movies really quick. So in the span of the week, I went and saw Backrooms, He-Man, and then a scary movie. Now, all within 7 days, and that's quite the roller coaster of movies I watched.
All right, so questions. All right, rank them first.
Oh, Master of the Universe was my favorite of the three. Bathrooms was kind of second. Bathrooms was a distant second. And then Scary Movie was just kind of there.
So Scary Movie's not a good movie?
No, I wouldn't pay to see it in the theater. Like, if it's on Netflix or some streaming platform, sure.
Okay, that's fair. I wonder. I think they had a big. I was wondering how they've done in the theaters, and this is saying it had a. It did good in its first weekend, and then it had a big drop, but that's kind of expected. I didn't think the movie would be like. I think the fact that it had even like.
That's what it turns. You get that nostalgia pop, and then it goes away.
Yeah. Apparently, though, it had a budget of $30 million and it's made $173 million worldwide. So, yeah, I think it did okay. And, Jamie from Perry is saying it's a scary movie, nothing more, nothing less. Listen, I liked the original, so I'm not going to. I liked two as well. So, after that, it got a little. you know, weird. So then, okay, so we have, we'll do this in the dogs are about to come out and they are going to light someone on fire. What was that?
Who let them out?
I don't know. We'll never find out. But they go to light someone on fire and it turns around and it's Copeland and he puts his hand on the match, which point order quickly takes his fingers off the match. It was a, like that was, I understand, like, I don't want to put out a match with my finger, so I'm not saying that that I would do it, but it did not look nearly as bad as I think they hoped, because it was a, like, oh, that hurt. And then him and Christian beat the dogs all the way to the ring, and then the dogs get out. Christian takes some shots saying, hey, I think you probably expect me to say something about a family member, but not for you guys. I mean, it's kind of odd you're named after what your mothers are. And it's like, okay, yeah, that's funny. Then Copeland gets on and being like, I get who you are. You think you're ready and you're the team that we were back in the 90s. And he names the teams that told him that they weren't ready. And that at Forbidden Door, they're going to show them that they're not ready. What'd you think of this whole thing?
I'm really surprised they didn't really take the low hanging fruit and call them the dogs, the bitches, because, you know, probably. Also, what kind of work environment do they have where you can walk around and light people on fire who are like production members? But promo is okay. I don't know. I feel like the more and more I listen to Copeland's promos, the more I don't like him as he gets older. I feel like he tries to be funny and edgy. He just doesn't land the same anymore for me. I don't know. Yeah. All I know is that you're going to see Kid again here pretty soon.
Yeah, I like, you know, I like the dogs and Gabe Kidd coming back. Hopefully he's doing a G1 run, so that should be fun over there. Wow, Big G placing Thomas Jane ahead of John Barenthal in the Punisher ranking. Interesting. I don't know if that's a ranking I would go, but interesting. Actually, Thomas Jane wasn't a bad Punisher. Just the movie was what it was. It was average. And yes, I'm all over the place, but who cares? We're almost done. Tekla has her promo calling out the Starlight Kid. I don't think there's anything to say about it. It's just that Tekla's very good at promos.
I got distracted by, like, when she was saying there, how big that championship belt is on her.
Yes.
It takes up, like, body. That's all I know. That's all I took away from it.
Then we have, we'll wrap up with Mercedes Moné versus Hazuki for their, you know, it was a semifinal match in the Owens Women World, Women's Owen Hart Foundation tournament. I probably could have said that better, but whatever. What I loved about this match was, again, I don't think the crowd was that great tonight, and I definitely don't think they were into Hazuki to start. And she got them into that match by just working her ass off. Yes, the three topes really helped, but just the whole thing. And by the end of the match, they were living and dying with how things were going. I mean, it was the crowd really was into it, and Mercedes deserves just as much credit, but I Hazuki being the unknown talent who wasn't getting a reception, I just, how good she is that she brought everyone in and had them cheering for her and really buying into it. Mercedes won with a statement maker, which, by the way, she grabbed the, I think it earlier in the match, one of the gnarliest ways to get into it. Like, she snapped the arm down. It looked awesome. This was incredible match. Again, I couldn't praise Suzuki more. What'd you think of it?
I was with the crowd in the beginning of it was kind of slow for the start, and I wasn't really into it. And I felt like there were some timing issues that kind of threw off the rhythm of it. But then the back half of the match really picked up with, like you said, the Topes and Hazuki just having that, like, those hard strikes that some of these Stardom wrestlers have. You know, when you think of, I'm trying to think of what's her name now from Stardom. Or recently from, Blake Monroe's real name.
Say it again?
Blake Monroe's other AEW name was RMA.
RMA? Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I hate when that happens when you start forgetting names.
I felt like the strikes that Hazuki was doing felt like a lot of the similar strikes that we saw from Mariah back when she was in AEW coming over from Stardom that we really liked to watch. And I thought Hazuki's just her in presence almost matched, if not matched, Mercedes. So that kind of helps build up the crowd effect. And I think the one of Hazuki's transitions she had when she Mercedes kicked out and then she transitioned into her own crossface. I thought that was really nice. I mean, again, from the technical side to the hard-hitting side, I mean, this might have been the match of the night for me.
Oh, it definitely was the match of the night for me. When she did the one snap down into the crossface, it was one of the nastiest things I've ever seen in the best way possible. Like, it was just awesome. Like, they delivered at a high level. I mean, they got the crowd into it, and again, I don't think the crowd wanted to be into it, and that's not they just seemed off tonight. I don't know why, but they, through sheer hard work, they just made it look awesome. And you're right, there was a little bit of timing in the beginning, but they got over that and they started, you know, I think that's one, at least the crowd did react as they got better, because that is one thing about these matches that are given time, it gives wrestlers the ability to get their timing down. But yeah, that's, I don't think, am I missing anything? I don't think so. I think that's the show. Peace is pointing out that has to be one of the longest Dynamite matches, women's Dynamite matches they've done. I agree. I was thinking that as I was watching it, that had to be on the longer side.
Yeah. I feel like Mercedes matches get time usually.
Yeah, which they should. You know. But yeah, that's it. So Joe, when you're not here, where can you be found?
You can find me celebrating the next championship still on social media at _AsianJoe. Ryan, are you still talking about history?
So it's been a while because I had other stuff I had to do, real life stuff that got in the way, but I will be up soon. I don't know what soon is, but I've said before, I want to have a bunch pre-done so that it gives me the time needed to stay ahead of things rather than fall behind again when real life catches up, but they will be coming out soon. So yes, it's at Here for History or at _HereForHistory, depending on where you are, Here for History on YouTube, but also follow us on all socials at Mark Order Pod. But with that, I go to the media assets and I put up the outro. Oh, thank you everyone in chat for showing up as well. Sorry, I'm not used to being the one to wind endings down anymore. And bye.
Mark Order Podcast. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming. Join us.